2. Eli was 13 years old the second time he met Harry. He'd hit the ugly phase in every child's puberty where his body had to decide whether it would gain height or weight first. Eli's body had chosen the second option. He still hadn't reached 5 feet, but he'd passed 130 pounds last summer. He hadn't stepped on a scale since, despite his mother's assurances it would all even out in the end. Mr. Jackson let him go half an hour early that day because he'd sorted all the shelves and there was nothing to do. There was little chance of a last-minute rush this early in the season. Honestly, no matter what the season was, there was almost never a chance of a rush at any store in Sanders. If it wasn't for last-minute goat ropers, his Grammy's favorite term for tourists, who couldn't get a motel closer to the beach, Eli was pretty sure Sanders would have vanished like a fart in the wind long before he was born. He still had a decent chance to catch up with Corey and Josh, though. They'd stopped by Jackson's an hour earlier to grab some magazines, a few comics, and a six-pack of Mountain Dew. They were heading to hang out on the bleachers for a while, until it got dark. Josh hinted there may be girls there, too. Not girls like Robin, who was pretty much cool and one of the guys, but maybe someone like Nicole, who was already on the cheerleading squad as a high school freshman and wearing mini skirts and long socks to school at least once a week. Eli dragged his 10-speed out of the storeroom, pumped the pedals, and cut down behind the video emporium toward the founder's house. It was a roundabout way to get to the baseball field, but it beat going by Pizza Pub and the fire station. The little lawn between the two was Zeke Miller's favorite hangout, and Eli didn't feel like dealing with the local bully today. Really, there weren't any days he felt like dealing with Zeke. Eli's size made him an easy target, in many ways. The founders loomed in front of him. The building sprawled across the top of a small hill, its white paint yellowed with age, and three or four of its windows cracked, but none actually broken. Eli could never decide if it looked more like a big mansion or a high-end hotel. He'd never seen anyone there to ask, and wouldn't have been interested enough to ask if he had. The founders just sat there, not quite at the center of town, getting older every year, and doing nothing else. There weren't even any good rumors about it. No suicides or hobo murders or angry ghosts or anything. Sanders was too boring to even have a plain old haunted house. Then, as if on cue, one of the windows burst with a crash of breaking glass. Eli clamped down on the brakes and his bike skidded to a halt. He heard the snickering laughter just a moment before the next rock pinged off his handlebars. He yanked his hands away as the laughter increased. "What are you looking at, flea-lie?" Zeke bounced another rock on his fingertips, eager to send it flying. For every inch Eli hadn't grown over the past few years, Zeke had grown too. He was already being prepped for the football team, even though school rules said he couldn't play until next year. Zeke's best, probably only, friend, Dougie, was with him. They stood at the base of the Founder's House Hill in the gravel side road that led over to the baseball field. Their own bikes lay in the tall grass behind them. "Nothing, Zeke," Eli sighed. He glanced at the road and wondered if he could get away before catching a rock in the back of the head. Zeke's aim wasn't fantastic, but it was good enough. And Eli was an easy target. A wisp of smoke curled from Dougie's hand. Eli's eyes went to it. It wasn't the first time he'd seen a classmate with a cigarette, but it was still something that caught him off guard. It was foolish, but in his mind, smoking was something for college students and adults. Dougie saw his eyes move. The other boy's face hardened. "You're not going to rat us out, are you, Tubby?" Eli shook his head. If he hadn't stopped his bike, he'd have been past them and heading down the alley toward the baseball field. He probably would have been able to see Corey and Josh by now, and maybe Nicole. "Well," snapped Zeke. His free hand flexed open and closed, like it did whenever he got overexcited. Everybody called it his spaz fist. "Answer him. You gonna rat us out or you gonna keep quiet?" "Yeah," Eli sighed. A grin spread across Zeke's broad jaw. "Yeah, you gonna keep quiet or yeah, you gonna rat us out?" Eli's chest sagged. His belly flexed against the waistband of his jeans. He'd played this game with Zeke before. Too many times. Which is why it caught him off guard when the rules changed. The rock hit him just above his right eye on the brow. The blow echoed through his skull, and for a moment his neck and back and legs wobbled. He grabbed at the handlebars of the bike to steady himself, but it tilted with him. Zeke and Dougie snickered.
"I think he's gonna cry," said the ape-jawed boy.
"Cry like a chubby little girl," Dougie said.
Eli's legs became solid again. The world stopped swaying. He flexed his knees and the bike straightened out between his legs. A few raindrops hit the back of his hand. Zeke's eyes went wide.
"Shit," he muttered.
He shifted his fingers and another lump of gravel dropped to the ground. Eli glanced up at the gray but cloudless sky. He looked down at his hand. The raindrops were dark red. He reached up to wipe his forehead. His eyebrow was sore and sticky. The fingers came back streaked with more red.
"Hey," said Zeke.
He cleared his throat.
"Hey, Eli, you okay?"
Insults, punches, tripping kids in the hall between classes, shoving them around. These things weren't pleasant, but they were accepted. Drawing blood was not. Everyone knew there were rules, even to being a bully. Eli's body trembled. Fight or flight, his science teacher called it. Eli knew the feeling all too well.
"I'm sorry," said Zeke. I don't think it's as bad as it looks."
Eli put his foot on the pedal and pushed down. The bike rolled forward, carrying him across the front of Founder's house. The other pedal came up and he shoved it back down with his toes. Zeke took a few steps.
"Eli,"
he called out again. Eli stood up on the pedals, pumping hard. Getting away was all that mattered, and he hated himself for running. He was halfway down the length of the Founder's house when he heard Zeke shout and another cackle from Dougie. A few minutes later, he stopped pumping the pedals, wiped his eyes, and looked around. He'd followed the road up the hill and around half of downtown, almost looping himself back to Main Street. He was on Cross Road, right between the two churches. The bright-colored Catholic church was next to him, and the dark Protestant one stood kitty-corner across the street. Cross Road wasn't named after the churches, but it was a handy coincidence. It also didn't cross anything else, ending at a T-intersection on either end. His eyelid was sticky, but the wetness on his hand wiped some of it clean. He rubbed his fingers on his jeans and left a dark stain only a mother would see. Some spit in his palm helped wipe off some more. Eli looked up at the Catholic church. Its doors were big and solid wood, but he knew there was a back door to the cellar that had a panel of glass in it. The sun was already near the trees, so he'd be able to get a good reflection and wipe more blood off his face. If he was lucky, he'd be able to pass it off as a random bike injury. High school was complicated enough for a freshman fat kid without his mother making phone calls and accusations.
"Piss bucket!"
The shout made him cringe. Zeke had decided a little blood wasn't anything to worry about after all and probably had a pocket full of stones. But the moment slipped away and Eli's breath eased. It hadn't been Zeke's voice. Or Dougie's. A clang of metal followed the shout. Eli scooted his bike forward past the line of shrubs to peer into the Protestant parking lot. In the back, half hidden in the shadows, was an old car. Eli saw a slim figure standing behind it, shaking a hand in the universal gesture for unexpected pain. Something rolled over in Eli's memories and stretched for a moment. He forgot his wounded eyebrow and Zeke and his mother. His foot pushed down and the bike rolled across the street. Another crank of the pedals carried him into the parking lot. He remembered seeing a film strip on cars like this in history class, one about Henry Ford and assembly line factories. This car was dark blue, with fenders that wrapped around the spoked wheels. The front seemed to be all chrome, and the round headlights were ringed with polished metal. A red plastic fuel can was strapped to the back, larger than the emergency ones the gas station sold. Panels of dark blue metal had been stacked on top of the hood. The older boy stood about 5'10" and thin. He had a soft face with green eyes and a small chin. His blonde hair curled on the sides and a loose ponytail with three ties in it slipped over his shoulder when he looked down at the engine. A collarless shirt hung on him with a blue vest draped over that. The teen took a few steps away from the car, held a piece of metal up in the sunlight, and gave Eli a view of baggy black pants. The sort of revolutionary period costumes some people dressed up in for holiday parades, except these looked real. The fabric was heavier and the clothes looked worn in. A pair of cowboy belts crisscrossed over the boy's hips, or maybe it was one elaborate belt. A holster hung on each thigh just below the waist, and gleaming black steel spilled out the top of each one. The older boy's eyes flitted from the square plate to Eli.
"Are you okay?"
he asked. His voice made the warm thing in Eli's memories stretch again.
"Were you in a fight?"
"Sort of," said Eli.
He dropped the kickstand on his bike and took a few steps toward the car. The teenager lowered the metal plate and worked something long and white back and forth along the edge. Tiny bristles scoured the coarse surface.
"How do you sort of get in a fight?"
asked the older boy. He lifted the toothbrush from the plate and blew some dust away.
"Do I know you?"
The teenager eyed the metal square and pursed his lips like someone working up to an unpleasant kiss.
"My father always said it's rude to answer a question with a question. I'm Eli Teague."
The memories yawned and threw back the blankets. The scent of phantom urine tickled Eli's nose. He coughed it away.
"Is your name Harry?"
The older boy raised an eyebrow.
"I guess you do know me."
He tucked the toothbrush into his belt and hefted a bulky object from the passenger's seat. It looked like two cans stuck together.
"So how do you sort of get in a fight?" "He threw a rock at me," said Eli.
Harry cradled the football-sized thing in his arm.
"You didn't get out of the way. I wasn't ready. He usually punches me in the arm or pinches my belly."
The other boy grunted. Eli watched, then cleared his throat.
"What is that thing?" "This, young Master Teague," said Harry, "is one of the miracles of the 20th century."
He lined up the piece of metal and pushed it down into the larger shape.
"It's a modified Garrett carburetor. I had some of the plates replaced with superconductive material to improve the electrolysis rate, but impurities build up and they need to get polished every few thousand miles or so."
The plate clicked into place and Harry sealed the metal shape closed. Eli nodded in a slow, thoughtful way.
"You have no idea what that means, do you?"
"Yeah, I do," Eli insisted.
"No, you don't."
Harry crouched down on his side of the car.
"It's okay. A few years ago, I didn't know what it all meant either."
Eli stepped closer and glanced at the exposed engine. Rather than leaning back toward the windshield, one whole side of the hood folded up and over the center line, becoming the stack of metal he'd seen from the other side. Harry leaned forward into the engine compartment, and Eli found himself looking along the engine and down the older teen's shirt. While Eli wasn't an experienced boy by any means, he'd been studying his female classmates' swelling bodies for some time now. The sight of cleavage in Harry's shirt made Eli's breath catch and his temperature flare. They weren't as big as some he'd seen in pictures and on videotapes, but those were definitely boobs. Boobs unhindered by a bra. As the older teen lowered the carburetor into position, there was even a quick flash of dark nipple.
"You're a girl,"
he squeaked, feeling both ashamed and excited. Harry looked up and followed his eyeline. She shook her head and pushed her shirt closed with her free hand.
"Don't be rude, Master Teague. We've only just met."
One finger came free of the shirt and twirled in the air. Eli stared at it for a moment, baffled. Then he turned around. He heard a rustle of cloth and a mutter.
"Okay," said Harry. "You can turn around."
He did. She turned her vest around backward. It sat on her like a high-necked apron, hiding any other glimpses from Eli's eyes.
"If you're going to stand here," she said, leaning back into the engine compartment, "you can at least earn that little show you just had. Grab a crescent wrench."
She waved at the passenger seat. Eli looked through the car and saw a battered toolbox. He jogged around the car, rooted through the tools, and came up with a rusted wrench that looked like it might have been last used during World War II. He dragged his thumb across it and the wrench unscrewed by a quarter inch.
"Any day now," said Harry. "Sorry."
He walked over and held up the wrench.
"Good."
She slid a bolt home through one of the carburetor's edges and twisted a washer and a nut over the end.
"Put it on the nut under this while I tighten this down."
Eli squeezed in and reached over the front fender. He got the wrench over the little hex and tightened it. The engine compartment smelled very clean.
"Okay," he said.
Harry's wrist whipped back and forth. Her own wrench grabbed the bolt, twisted it, let go, and grabbed it again.
Eli felt the nut shift and tighten itself against the washer.
"Next one's a little harder," she told him.
The bolt slid through on the other side of the pipe next to the engine itself. He stretched his arm around and realized he was pressed up against Harry. He could feel her body through the clothes between them. Eli got his wrench on the nut and tried very hard to think of all the issues of Amazing Spider-Man he needed to complete his collection. When Harry leaned forward and shifted her leg, rubbing it against his, he began listing members of the Teen Titans and the X-Men. Her wrist moved again, the nut and bolt snuggled together, and the carburetor settled into position. She held out her hand for the wrench.
"I can get the last ones myself."
"I can help," he said.
"Better if I do it myself," she said.
Eli handed over the wrench.
"Besides," she added, "I think you might pass out if we bump hips again."
His cheeks heated up. He stepped back. A rattle of metal on metal echoed out of the engine compartment, and a minute later Harry straightened up. She tossed the wrenches into the box with a clang. Now that he knew what to look for, Eli could see her hips shift and the way her clothes hung on her. Not just a girl, but a grown-up woman.
"Why do you call yourself Harry?" he asked. "Are you hiding from someone?" "Harry's my name," she said, folding down the car's hood and rattling it into place. "Short for Harriet."
"Oh," said Eli.
"I never liked Harriet. It always felt like a scratchy name, kind of harsh."
She lowered the other side of the hood and pointed at the hose coiled up on the side of the church.
"Does that work?"
He shrugged. Harry pulled the hose free and dragged it over to the car. She stepped up onto the running board and reached across the hood to unscrew the cap of the gas tank. The hose went in and she walked back to twist the spigot. Water spurted out around the end of the hose. A rushing noise came from the tank.
"What's that for?"
Eli asked.
"Just to top off," she said. "I've got over half a tank in the main, but my reserve's almost dry. I'd rather take the time now than wish I had when I'm getting close to a lead."
He blinked.
"But what's the water for?"
"It's fuel," she said.
Eli frowned.
"Cars don't run on water," he said.
"That's stupid."
"I'd be careful tossing that word around, Master Teague,"
said Harry.
"You're the one who just lost a fight with a rock."
"Cars run on gas," he insisted, "not water.
The carburetor breaks water down into hydrogen and oxygen. The engine burns the hydrogen. The oxygen goes out the exhaust pipe."
She pulled the hose free and walked around to the back of the car, making a long puddle alongside it.
"Tap water's not the best. The impurities build up on the plates, like I told you before."
A few twists of her fingers got the cap off the red tank, and she shoved the end of the hose in deep.
"But if you really had a car that ran on water," said Eli, "you'd be rich, a millionaire. Everybody would buy one."
Harry shrugged and rapped her knuckles on the red tank. It was a hollow sound.
"Are you rich?"
he asked. She shook her head.
"I believe I've got $40 to my name," she said, tugging off her backward vest, "and 15 of that in Confederate bills. Why would you think I'm rich?"
"Because of how you dress," he said.
"Rich people can dress however they want because they've got money. They're not weird, they're eccentric."
She slid her arms through the vest and shrugged it over her shoulders.
"Big word for a young man. I read a lot."
Harry wrapped the tank again, and this time it was a dull thunk. She dragged the hose out and spun the cap back on. She pulled the gushing hose back to the church and shut it off.
"Well,"
she said, coiling it against the wall.
"It's been pleasant, Eli Teague, but the road beckons. I must be on my way."
"Where?"
"There's a little ghost town out in Arizona called Jerome," she said. "I need to get out there before the copper mine closes so I can talk to a man about a dream."
Eli mulled this over.
"But if it's a ghost town," he said, "doesn't that mean the mine's already closed?"
"Which," Harry said, walking back to the car, "is why I need to get there before it closes."
She flipped a few switches on the dashboard. The engine started up, purring like a content cat. Harry walked back to the driver's side, pulled her coat off the seat back, and spun it onto her arms. It wrapped around her and hung down almost to her knees. Eli's heart pounded in his chest. He took a step toward the car as she settled into the seat.
"Why do you need to talk to a man about his dream?"
She looked at him.
How did he ever think she was a boy? "It's not his dream I'm looking for," she explained.
"What's that mean?"
"It means goodbye, Master Teague."
He tried to think of something that might stop her. Instead, he blurted out,
Will I ever see you again?
Harry took her hands off the steering wheel.
How adorable, she said.
She pulled him in and pinched his cheek, the one away from his sticky eyebrow.
It was nice talking with you.
She let him go and he took a step back. Her feet shifted and the car rolled backward away from the church. It curved around, pointing itself at the street, and started forward. The exhaust smelled fresh and clean.
So will I see you again?
He called out.
It's a big country, Harry said. Anything's possible.
She gave him a wave as the car turned out of the parking lot and onto Cross Road. The purr of the engine became a low rumble, and the car raced away. By the time Eli ran across the parking lot to the street, the old car was gone.